This is One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health.
All right, welcome to OTA Week. One Bills Live, Chris Brown, Maddie Glab, in for Steve Tasker, who is still doing charity golf on a Monday.
Golfing.
Guy bookended his
away.
Weekend with charity golf on Friday and now again on Monday. He's got it good.
Don't worry, Tasker, I'm here.
To say the least. But we got Maddie here with us today, just as we did on Friday. And OTAs are underway here at One Bills Drive. Players getting out on the field today. They will do the same tomorrow when there is media availability. So we'll have wall-to-wall coverage of that, not only on BuffaloBills.com, but right here on the show. Head coach Sean McDermott scheduled to address the media tomorrow late in the morning. So we'll have all the nuts and bolts from that, too. Before we get into more of that, we both had, let's just say, some interesting weekends, Maddie.
We had busy weekends.
So let's kick it off with Saturday, which looked a little dicey for a while for you because you're down in the Elmwood Village and you had Porch Fest going on. Maybe just explain first what that is to those that may not know.
So Porch Fest is so much fun. This is my second time going, and I look forward to it every spring, summer, whatever you want to call this time. I guess it's really spring in Buffalo because it got cold on Saturday night. So it was during the day on Saturday. You can, if you have a porch in front of your house or a nice patch of grass in front of your house, you can put in to have a band play on your porch. So they call it Porch Fest. It's all across Elmwood Villages. And then also restaurants and shops can also have bands play in front of their stores. Wow. And you kind of just walk around the neighborhood and you go see band to band to band to band. So you kind of hop around the entire neighborhood watching bands play. And we have a friend who also works for the Bills who plays in a band. And we love going to see him play. But it was raining on Saturday morning. Bands started, I think, around noon. So we didn't really get out of the house until 3 when the rain stopped. So we went to 2 bands. And then by the time the second band ended, it was about 6 o'clock. And I was thinking to myself, I could use a winter jacket right now.
Yeah.
It got really cold on Saturday night. I'm sure a lot of people who are out and about kind of thought that as well, because the sun started to peek out a little bit in the late afternoon. And I was like, okay, this is not too bad. It's in the 50s, but the sun's out. It's good. And then the sun went away and it was pretty, pretty cold, but fun day.
I have a question about Porch Fest, having never attended. Are the bands far enough away from one another where there isn't, like, bleed over from one to the other? How do they police that?
Yes and no. So last year we went to, I can't remember what street it was, but we were on a street that had 2 bands playing across the street from each other.
Oh,
so
a battle of the bands,
like 50 feet away from each other, and you could hear both bands, depending on where you were standing.
Yeah.
If you were
in the
street
there,
you could hear both. If you were near one of the houses, you could mostly hear that band. But for the most part, it's far enough away from each other to where people aren't bleeding into each other. The sound of the bands aren't clashing. But
those two should have just played together. Played
it
the
happens.
Same thing.
Yeah.
So blow it out.
It's a fun time. Everybody's out and about. Last year, it was incredible weather. This year, not so much. But by the time we got out in the afternoon, there were a lot of people walking around.
Yeah,
so
the weather turned late afternoon, thankfully, because it was a soaker for a while there Saturday morning. I mean, whew, like, I was just, come on. Like,
I know.
I know it hadn't rained in 2 weeks, so we really can't complain, but that was a soaker for sure. And then on Sunday, you got much better weather, thankfully, when you were out at the final round of the PGA Championship.
Yeah, I was out at the last day of the PGA Championship in Rochester, which has been fun to be out. I was out there on Tuesday for an event that a few of our players were a part of. I know a lot of people were out there on Saturday and had to bear and be in that rain.
Yeah.
So kudos to all you guys who were out there on Saturday and still had a fun day. I saw a lot of pictures of people running through the mud and sliding through the mud and in ponchos and, you know, doing it, being out there in the wild, in the rain, and still having a great time. We got blessed with some incredible weather on Sunday and spent the entire day out there. So had an early morning and got to the course at like 8 in the morning. So right when everybody started to tee off and got to kind of follow a few players. Didn't really follow too many guys. We had a kind of a club that we were sitting in. So Watched a lot of guys come through on six there and then walked a little bit around four, five, and six in the afternoon. And then once the leaders started to come through, because their tee times were in the afternoon around 2 o'clock, 2:30. So we kind of followed. We had a friend with us who is a big fan of Brooks Koepka.
Oh,
and
okay.
So we started to follow Brooks for the last few holes, which Brooks won it all.
Yeah.
So it was fun to be with our friend who loves Brooks Koepka and got to see his reaction of Brooks winning it all. But there were so many people there, and I'm sure everybody listening as well thought, you know, you've got so many friends out here. You've got so many people you know out here. We were running into a lot of people, ran into Eric Wood, ran into a bunch of people who worked for the Bills or the Sabres. So it was just a wonderful Sunday afternoon to be out in a beautiful place. Oak Hill did a fantastic job with the tournament. It was so fun seeing some Bills shirts, some jerseys in the crowd as well. On 15, when Brooks, I think Brooks was on 15 at this point, but we kind of hung out at 15 for a while. Watch some groups go through, and there was a hey that broke out, and somebody was like, come on, guys, we're better than this. I was like, no, let them have it. Nobody's golfing right now. This is pure Western New York goodness that some people are experiencing who came in from out of town to watch this tournament and to get to be a part of everything going on. And man, oh man, Michael Block, that story was fantastic.
It was
so fun to follow a guy like that, a club pro who qualified for this tournament. It was his fifth PGA, and he's never made the weekend before. He was one of 20 club pros to be a part of the tournament, but he was the only one to make the 36-hole cut, and he holed it in on 15. I think it was from like 151 yards out. One of my friends was at the hole. I know a lot of Bills people were at this hole because that was another area that we had some passes for. And they said it was an incredible experience watching that happen. It was so cool to see a guy like this, just a club pro from California. The video that came out on Saturday, he was paired with Justin Rose on Saturday. Saturday night finds out he's going to be paired with Rory McIlroy. That video came out and kind of went viral on social media. He was all excited to be paired with a golfer like Rory, and then went out and had a hole-in-one on 15 on the final day. He finishes in the top 15, so this locks him in for next year. He made over $300,000 finishing in the top 15.
Tied for 15th,
The most money that he's made next to that is $75,000. So this was a big weekend for him. I mean, a lot of people probably saw the interviews that he did after. He was in tears. I would be too. The sport means so much to him. And these are the stories that I absolutely love as a sports fan, getting to see something like this come together.
He didn't believe he hit it. Like, he was, if you saw the video right after, he's like, that didn't go
in. And the people making the call didn't know it either. There is one of the analysts was like, I don't think it went in. The other guy's like, yeah, that's in.
It's in the hole.
Yeah, dunked it in on 15. So
I think I've only seen that like one other time ever. That is like super rare.
And for
that
somebody,
is a needle in a haystack shot.
And for somebody like him to be able to do that, I mean, he got a lot of one of us, one of us. And then a lot of people are just cheering, block, block,
block, block.
The coolest
social video I saw on the heels of that, somebody had video footage of his club where they were all watching him at the bar.
Yeah, that was awesome.
And they watched the shot
people
in the
went,
place.
People
it looked like a Bills
nuts.
Backers bar on a Sunday, like on a game-winning play.
Yeah.
The shot goes down, and the whole place erupts.
Yeah.
Like, for a minute and a half. They're like, jump. I mean, they probably had a few in them.
Yeah.
They were rolling.
Yeah. He was tied for eighth going into the final day, and
and because of that, he qualifies for the PGA Championship, so he gets to play next year.
He
too.
Gets to play next year since he finished top 15. That locks him into next year. And then after the tournament was over, after he finished his day, a lot of celebration. I mean, he was right next to Brooks as Brooks was getting awarded, and they were letting him know he was the winner, and everybody's, you know, crowding 18 and celebrating, and Michael Block was right there next to him and was doing interviews as well, and people were cheering for him. So that, I don't know. As a sports fan, I love
easy
stories like that.
Underdog.
It's easy to root for the underdog. It was so cool. And then afterward, he got a call from, I don't know who exactly it was, but he got a call from somebody running next week's PGA Tour event in Texas. It's the Charles Schwab Challenge.
Yeah.
So he got a call to be invited out to that.
He also got invited to the RBC Canadian Open. So he's like the soup du jour right now.
Yeah. So I'm a Michael Block fan now for now. So
who isn't?
Who isn't?
After that shot. That was a one in a million shot.
So that was a really fun story throughout the weekend for everybody who was following, for everybody who was there to get to witness something like that. How can you not cheer for him?
Yeah, that was really cool. So my weekend wasn't as action-packed as yours was. As we told you on Friday's show, you know, Maddie had this packed weekend, Porch Fest, followed by PGA Championship. I had a meat raffle Friday night, which is really a Buffalo institution if you think about it. This one was for Literacy Buffalo Niagara, great cause. My wife's on the board. So we've got a table. And so, you know, we've got some friends with us, and we're all ready to roll, and we are not doing well. We're buying tickets and
was it a busy meat raffle? Like, do you think you guys weren't doing well because there were a lot of people at that meat raffle, or just unlucky?
If I had to guess, there were probably 200 people there.
That's pretty big.
It's pretty big. About 20 tables of 10 people. So it was hopping. I mean, it was a hopping place. We had this group next to us. They have these sticks with clips on the end to hold up their money for each round to buy a ticket.
Oh my gosh. They've got
rubber dog toys on them with like a rubber steak. They've got a rubber pig, a rubber chicken. Like these people are like,
they're on the circuit. These are professional meat rafflers.
Yeah, they're on the circuit. So I probably should have taken more notes
from them in terms of their meat raffle tour.
Judiciousness in buying tickets. But anyway, we are getting skunked. Our table hasn't won a thing. And we're about halfway through the thing, and they take a break. And that's when they announce door prizes. So they had like four or five baskets, kind of like the kind you'd see at a basket raffle. And we had, you know, bought a sheet of tickets, and we threw some stuff in there, not thinking anything of it. And so our table has, we have won nothing to this point. So they do the door prizes. Bing, our number hits. So my wife's all excited. She goes running up to grab it. What did we win?
Oh, no.
We win the Bills basket raffle. We won the Bills basket. So now people are laughing because they're like, of all the things you won a Bills basket, which was great. I mean, don't get me wrong. We were happy to win because it included two tickets, too, to a game.
You
so
go to a game,
that
Brownie?
Was really cool. Well, we're always getting asked, and sometimes we let people use our tickets, but, you know, it's they're in demand now. So having an extra pair is helpful. But in any event, that's what we won. And then my brother and sister-in-law were late. So we're about halfway through this thing, and my brother and sister-in-law show up. And again, the table has been skunked. We haven't won a piece of bacon. We've won nothing. They sit down. They buy their first set of tickets for round like eight. Bing, they hit, right? And so we're like, unbelievable. They just got here and they won something. So they go up, they collect their thing, but that was the key. It got us on a hot streak, and I would say before the night was over, three other people at our table had won. So that made me feel better. Because, you know, you're inviting people to come, hey, have fun at the meat raffle. If you don't win, it's kind of tough, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So I think almost everybody won something. So, and those are fun. It's a good time.
And Brownie got a couple new Bills sweatshirts.
I got a couple of Bills hats, a couple of Bills sweatshirts. It was pretty funny, though. I was like, which one did we get? And she comes back.
You got the Bills bag.
It was hilarious. But it was a good time. We had a lot of fun. So that was good. And the irony of that was kind of funny. I don't know what it is. I don't have a lot of luck at meat raffles. Because I told you, the other one I went to, all I won was a stick of pepperoni. I was happy, though. One of our guys at the table, he won a gigantic pork loin. The thing is, like, he said he's going to cook it up for July 4th because he always hosts on July 4th, so that was good. But, yeah, it was a good time. I just had to laugh at that and had to bring in the
visual.
That's
hilarious.
That was pretty funny. OTA week it is, and we will get into what our topic of discussion is because now is the time where we start thinking about the roster a little bit more. But is the roster set in stone? I think we all know the answer to that is no. And I think we also know that Brandon Bean is a tinkerer. He is always trying to massage the roster even when the popular times on the calendar to adjust your roster, free agency, draft, are long gone. He's always talking about that. Even when we have him for the pre-draft press conferences, mm-hmm. Matty, he says, just because the draft is over doesn't mean the roster's set. He's always trying to tinker and make things a little bit better. So we thought with OTAs starting up, it was apropos to ask you, what position in your mind do you think still might need a little bit of tweaking, and tell us why? 803-0550, the number to get on board, 1-888-550-2550, the toll-free calling number if you're outside the 716 calling area. Because we've seen Bean do this, like May, sometimes June, but even like right before training camp, during training camp, during the preseason games, and then even after final cuts, you know, mm-hmm. some other team clips a guy that you had your eye on maybe back yeah. in May and you didn't get him. So with that in mind, we're kind of asking you, if you're the GM, if you're Brandon Bean for a day, what position might you want to tweak a little bit? So you guys chew on that for a while, and Manny and I will get our thoughts on that as well, probably in the second segment, because it's time for us to go around the NFL, which is brought to you by Kaleida Health, the official healthcare system of the Buffalo Bills. We have more current news, but I think we would be remiss, Matty, if we didn't at least mention that over the weekend we saw the passing of maybe one of the best players in the history yeah. of the game, Jim Brown, passing away over the weekend at age 87. Obviously a Hall of Famer and widely considered even now one of the best players to ever play the game. Yes, he retired early to take on a movie career. I guess if he played his full career, his numbers would be even more breathtaking, because nobody beat his rushing record, which was set back in the late 60s, until Walter Payton did it in the mid-80s. I mean, it took a full generation of players, and Walter Payton, who's my favorite player of all time, had to play like six more seasons than Jim Brown to rack up the same rushing totals. So just an amazing, amazing player, an amazing athlete, and the fact that he is a Long Island native, Matty, I was made aware of who Jim Brown was at a very early age. And as a matter of fact, my high school played against his high school.
No way.
Yeah, so just a really cool thing. So playing high school basketball, I played in the same gym that he played in.
Wow.
His number is up on the wall.
Wait,
his basketball
so cool.
jersey's retired. And then playing lacrosse in the spring, I played on the same lacrosse field as Jim Brown, and the only reason I knew that was right at midfield, just off the sideline, there is this giant bust of Jim Brown at Manhasset High School
wow.
on Long Island, because a lot of people on Long Island will tell you that Jim Brown was an even better lacrosse player than mm-hmm. he was a football player.
Mm.
Just completely unstoppable guy on the lacrosse field. I mean, at 6'3", 250 pounds, like, you really can't check the guy and keep him from scoring. He just bowls you over and goes in and scores. Because I think, if memory serves, he did play some lacrosse at Syracuse as well, in addition to playing football. But, yeah, just an absolute legend and a big-time social activist, too, through mm-hmm. the 60s there, you know, with civil rights and everything. He was a big backer of Muhammad Ali.
Yep.
An unfortunate loss, but that's a pretty good life. 87. I know I'll be happy.
Yeah, I saw a picture that got tweeted out of him and Muhammad Ali
yep.
going for a run together. And when you see two big name people like that, and it's just a moment frozen in time, I thought that was so cool to be around people like that, to be as big of a name as somebody like Muhammad Ali, to be involved in some of the things that Muhammad Ali was and the activism side of things. You know, that's what you want to get remembered for, things like that. Of course, he had an incredible NFL career and has some crazy numbers from the years that he played with the Browns, but to be remembered and to have your legend or your name live on for things other than football, I think is always so cool.
Yeah. And he was a big backer of Muhammad Ali when he was, you know, trying to avoid getting, you know, going into the draft for Vietnam. So,
mm-hmm.
yeah, I mean, did as much off the field as he did on and continued that well into his 80s. So, yeah, a life well lived for sure, as they say. Other stuff, we have owners' meetings going on right now as we speak up in Minnesota. And among the things that are going to be decided at the Spring League meeting today and tomorrow, they're going to decide on a new rule, Maddie, that would place all kickoff fair catches at the 25-yard line. That doesn't happen terribly often, but if it does, they're going to treat it like a touchback on a kickoff, put it at the 25, which would kind of remove, if you think about it, because you saw the Bills do this last year, Maddie. They would have Tyler Bass kick the kick short on purpose, force them to field it, because they had so much confidence in their coverage team, they thought they could make the tackle before the 25-yard line. So if you can get a give the opponent, you know, a lesser drive start, go ahead and do it. This would kind of eliminate that, because if you're popping it up short,
fair catch.
They just wave their hand for a fair catch and they get it at the 25, no questions asked. I understand that's a safety measure. Yeah. You're taking more hits out of the game.
Yep.
I guess the way around that for special teams coaches would be to just squib it along the ground. Can't fair catch a kick on the ground. So that would be the workaround, I guess, if you're a special teams coordinator out there. Can Thursday night games be flexed late in the season? That'll be voted on. The location of the 2025 NFL draft. We know next year's draft's going to be in Detroit. And then the location of Super Bowl 60, which according to reports looks like it's going to be San Francisco, Levi's Stadium. Fourth consecutive year, though, Maddie, the proposed alternatives to the onside kick are tabled again. They're not going to vote on it. They want to talk about it more. This has been going on for like 3 or 4 years now. This is the whole fourth and 15 option or fourth and 20 option. You know, you score, you're trying to get back in the game. Instead of an onside kick, do you get the option to do a fourth and 15 play? And then if you get the first down, you keep the ball. I guess they want to talk about it more. I don't know what else needs to be discussed, because you have to believe the competition committee has researched this thoroughly. You know, they always worry about unintended consequences and all of that stuff, and I totally get all that. I just wonder if it's ever going to come to a vote. They can't even get to the table to vote on it.
I know, and they do it. I mean, you've seen it play out, and you've seen it exist in the XFL. So it, to have new rules or to have, whether it's ideas or whatever you want to call it, of different versions of scenarios and how it could play out differently in the XFL is the perfect starter, the perfect conversation starter, the perfect example of, hey, is this going to work? Is this not going to work? I think players think it is a good idea, depending on who you talk to. Maybe some prefer an onside kick over a fourth and 15, over a fourth and 20. Certainly, it would make it a little bit more interesting. I think that'd be cool in the NFL.
Yeah, and I think if you know the offense has that choice after scoring, you know, they're trying to get back in the game. Yeah, and the onside's kick is just even less successful than it used to be, because you can't do the running start to run up to the line anymore. You got to stand at the line of scrimmage on the kickoff. So that makes onside's kicks even more difficult to recover by the kicking team. So, yeah, I thought it would get more merit. I thought it would at least get to a vote this year, but that apparently is not going to happen. ESPN.com is reporting that in the wake of five players being suspended back in April for illegal gambling, the NFL is now investigating a second wave of potential violations of its gambling policy. That, according to ESPN, no players or coaches or NFL personnel have been named, but they are saying, I mean, we know to this point, seven NFL players, one assistant coach, and an undisclosed number of team employees have been found to violate the policy over the past few years. So now there's an investigation as to whether or not there were more or not. And the reason why, and I kind of knew about this, Maddie, but not in depth. They have these companies like U.S. Integrity. They've partnered with the NFL, and they have these platforms that can track bets being placed by prohibited individuals. Because for the players,
and where they're being placed.
Right. So the players can't do it on NFL property at their team facilities, things like that. That's how Jameson Williams from the Lions got caught on that, because he bet while he was at the team facility. Calvin Ridley bet out of state which was illegal because of where he was and what he was betting for. Like, he was in – he's from Georgia because he was playing for the Falcons at the time and then bet out of state in Florida, which I don't think had gambling approved yet a couple of years ago, and he got caught that way. But, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what this investigation uncovers. There are other people that could be in trouble here.
Yeah.
It's going to be bad if it's players.
It's a sticky situation. It's, you know, I understand it, but it's also interesting to see states roll out with new laws and things like that. And then, you know, down the line in the future, in the next, I don't know how many years, but things are going to continue to change. And how do players fit into that? How do coaches fit into that? How do staff members fit into all of that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll see. We don't know much right now, but that's what ESPN is reporting. We'll see what they uncover if and when names are mentioned in terms of gambling violations. We also have the Mekhi Becton story, and this is interesting for two reasons. First, Mekhi Becton, we were just talking to Eric Allen last week, the Jets.com reporter, and he was telling us Becton is in great shape. He's down to like 342 pounds, which is the lightest he's been probably in about 6 years. He's on this new regimen to stay in shape, wants to come back and be a success, but then he sits down with Bob Glauber from Newsday and spills his guts about what's happened the last 2 years and basically blames the Jets coaching staff for the injury that cost him last season. He basically claimed that he was told that putting him at right tackle was what was going to happen, and he had to play there even though he had a bad injury in his right knee, which if you're playing right tackle, that's your kickback leg in pass protection, which is a lot more difficult if you have a right knee injury. So he claims that being forced to play over there made his knee injury worse to the point where he needed season-ending surgery. He said his complaints were dismissed by the coaching staff. He had been limping around during practices. And even while he was trying to play right tackle with the bad knee, he said his knee buckled at one point, requiring the reconstructive surgery that cost him the season. He's played in one game over the last 34 the past two seasons by the Jets. And I don't know about you, Maddie, but if you're the Jets and you're reading this, it's like, how many chances... this frays the relationship, doesn't it? Like,
and a couple weeks ago, he was tweeting that he was a left tackle, which, okay,
yes.
If you're tweeting you're a left tackle, then go out and compete for that or go out and do that. That's basically what Coach Sala said when he was asked about it in media availability. You know, Mekhi has expressed that he wants to be a left tackle.
Well, now and we kind of know why.
What do you have to say to that? And he said, go earn your spot then. If that's where you want to play, go earn it.
Right. And that's all well and good. But now, seeing what happened last year and being forced to play right tackle, now you know why he's putting it out there. Hey, mm-hmm. I want to play left tackle. And not for nothing, I wouldn't be surprised if Bob Glauber, who's an excellent reporter and has covered the Jets for a long time, if he saw that tweet by Mekhi and said, let me talk to him. Let me see what's up. And this is the result
let
of that.
Let me stir the pot.
The problem is now Mekhi is out there blaming a coaching staff that, at least as far as I can tell, is still intact. I think the offensive line coach is still there, because that was Saleh's first year or second year, and I don't think he made a coaching change there. So now you've got the same coaching staff that Becton's got to work with again that he publicly complained about.
Yeah, that's tough. That's
and blames
really tough.
For his injury. To me, that's a frayed relationship there, which makes this very interesting, Maddie. According to reports, former Patriots offensive tackle Yodny Cajuste is visiting the Jets today, and the Giants tomorrow. Does
Drama.
He get to the Giants on Tuesday? I don't know if he does. The Patriots just cut him last week due to what they felt was a surplus at that position, so they cut him free. Cajuste was the guy that actually played against the Bills in that, was that a Sunday night game or a Monday night game up there? I can't remember now.
Gosh.
Last season. The one they won 24-10. I think it was a Sunday night game. I think. Doesn't matter. The point is, he's not on the Patriots anymore. The Jets are going to have him in for a visit, kick the tires on him, decide what they want to decide. But with the Becton complaints, you know, in the publications today, you've got Kajus coming in. I'm just wondering if the other shoe drops here and Mekhi Becton's looking for a job. Because that's a pretty bold statement to make. And that's the way he feels. That's fine. You want to express yourself. But holy crow. Job security, buddy.
Yeah.
Job security.
Expressing something like that publicly out there in the open for
everyone
New York
to
media to chomp on,
yeah,
and to do whatever they want with.
Well, they'll ask solid questions all week now.
Yeah.
To follow up on.
Yeah.
To get the latest tidbit. Oh, you're going to cut him? Is the relationship now frayed? Is it this irreparable? Is this now the point of no return? You know, are you going to trade him? Like, what are you going to do?
Yeah, that's not good. You usually want those things to happen behind closed doors, conversations with the coaching staff, conversations with the players. When this stuff gets out in the open, yuck.
Yeah. So that is Around the NFL, brought to you by Kaleida Health, the official healthcare system of the Bills. Topic of discussion for you today, what position do you think still needs tweaking on the Bills roster? You know, Brandon Bean loves to tinker all offseason to get the roster just right for training camp and even for the regular season through the course of the preseason. So you tell us if you have a position in mind that you think needs just to ever so slightly to be tweaked to make you feel better going into training camp and the regular season. 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550, the number to get on board here on a Monday on One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Maddie Glab with you. Stay tuned. All right, welcome back to One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Maddie Glab with you on a Monday. We do know that we're having some technical issues with the phones as well as the radio stream on the Odyssey app. Sit tight if that's how you usually consume the show, although you're probably not hearing this. But if you're hearing this and you have friends that listen on the stream, maybe shoot them a text or a tweet and let them know, hey, stream's down right now. They're working to get it back up, so please be patient, and our engineers will be on it. They're on it right now, and hopefully they get it rectified in the not-too-distant future. Also, one other thing, I double-checked regarding the Mekhi Becton story. He was basically blaming his offensive line coach for his injury that cost him the 2022 season. That was John Benton. He was dismissed and replaced by Keith Carter. So it is a new offensive line coach for Mekhi Becton. So maybe he is all right saying what he said about the former offensive line coach of the Jets, forcing him to play with an injury. Now, that being said, Maddie, there is one more tidbit concerning the Jets. There was another Jets player, Ty Johnson, the running back.
Yeah.
He said he was cut right after the team asked him to have surgery that he didn't want to have. So there seems to be a few things going on in Jets land that don't exactly sound completely on the level, but we'll leave that to the New York media to dive into and uncover further. But it's interesting when there's more than one of those kinds of stories. Two very different situations. You got a hurt guy that they're forcing to play, and then you got a guy that they think needs surgery and he doesn't want it. But you got to wonder about the medical decision-making going on down there when you have more than one player dealing with these kinds of things. But we'll let the Jets handle the Jets. We're handling the Bills and what position you believe might need just a little bit of tweaking on Buffalo's roster between now and the start of the regular season. Yes, the bulk of offseason roster construction is done, but as we know, Brandon Bean is always tinkering with the roster here and there, and wouldn't shock us if we see some more things come down the pike in the coming weeks or even right before training camp. So you let us know what you think. Hitting us up on the tweet sheet is probably your best course of action right now with the phone lines down. So at One Bills Live is where you can do that. So that's where we are. Maddie, do you have a position in that comes to mind for you per se, like just something that you say, you know what, maybe if they got one little added piece here, or maybe I'd like to see more of this at this position? I don't know if you had anything that came to mind per se.
I think off the top of my head right now, without giving it too much thought at this point, you know, defensive tackle is a position that Brandon Bean has talked about, is a position that he has said, you know, we might add more to this group. We understand we don't have a lot of guys on, or really any guys on contract-wise past this next season, and we would like to fix that so we're not in a bad place once we finish up with the 2023 season and head into 2024, at least start thinking about the 2024 roster. So defensive tackle depth-wise, I think that could help this position group because of the way the defensive line has played in the past. We know Sean McDermott will be calling plays this year. That is new, but Eric Washington, their defensive line coach, has been the D-line coach now. This will be his third season, I want to say, with that group, and he likes to rotate bodies to keep the legs fresh, to send new, fresh bodies at offensive linemen who are getting tired throughout a game. So if you want to use bodies, you got to have players.
Yeah, and they do have some younger players in the mix. I know Brandon Bean did say that he was happy that they were able to pick up Cameron Klein off waivers recently.
Mm-hmm.
You still have Kingsley Jonathan in the fold, who was a practice squad player last year as a rookie, went to play a few games in Chicago, then got released, was back with the Bills at the end of the season, even played against the Bears on Christmas Eve, got some playing time there. So that's another guy that'll be in the mix at, you know, a pass rushing position. But yeah, defensive tackle was a little thin. They got a couple of undrafted free agents to play on the defensive interior. DJ Dale probably headlines that group, the Alabama kid, more than anybody else. But if you have a position in mind, you let us know. Phone lines are back up at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550, the number to get on board. And let's go to Leslie in Buffalo. What do you got for us, Leslie?
How you doing, Chris?
Good.
Hi, Maddie.
Hello.
Yes, can you hear me?
I can, yeah.
Okay. Maddie took my thought. Defensive tackle, biggest Justin Phillips, and wideout. Could we get Arizona's wideout?
Oh, you're still on the DeAndre Hopkins train, huh?
Yes. We get 9-10 draft choices next year. Could we work some now?
Yeah, I see what you're saying, Leslie. Like, the Bills would seem to have the draft capital to pull something like that off. The problem is the money that DeAndre Hopkins is owed, which is $34 million in base salary over the next 2 years, which the team that inherits him would be responsible for in total. That seems to be the biggest stumbling block, and even DeAndre Hopkins has said, well, I think I'm going to be stuck here. I think the more interesting one is the one Maddie and I were talking about late last week on the show, with Devontae Adams seemingly unhappy in Las Vegas about the direction the offense is taking with new quarterback Jimmy Garoppolo. Could that be an opportunity for a team looking to augment the receiver position, knowing he only counts $6 million in base salary? The problem there is the opposite. The cap hit that Las Vegas would incur if they moved him off the roster would be upwards of $30 million. So money is the issue. When things make sense and they still don't happen, look at the money. And that's probably the biggest reason why something like that doesn't happen. Let's go back to the phones and to Al up in Wilson. What do you got for us, Al?
Hi. Big fan of the show.
Oh, thanks.
I got a question on OTAs.
Sure.
What does OTA stand for? I've asked quite a few people, and nobody seems to know.
Yeah, it's off-season training activities.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. That's because it's not just practice. There are conditioning things that take place during that point in time, along with a host of other things, weight training, that type of stuff. So I think they just use that phrase to encompass all of it. And since off-season training activities is a mouthful, they abbreviate it.
Oh, okay. As far as tweaking positions, I don't think anything needs to be tweaked. I think last year they had so much happen that control that emotionally they just run out of gas, and I think this year will be a totally different scenario. That's my feelings on it.
All right, well, I respect it, and I get it, and I'm sorry, it's organized team activities. I don't know why I said off season.
It would make sense.
Yeah, organized team activities is OTAs. Yeah, I mean, you think they're gonna run out of gas? They ran out of gas last year for a whole different reason,
mm-hmm.
You know, due to the emotional toll that the DeMar Hamlin incident took on them. I don't know. What do you think about Al's take?
He said that he didn't think they would run out of gas this year. So,
that's the hope.
This past season was a long season for just about everybody on the team, what they had to endure, what they had to go through, the injuries. You couple and pair that all together, I don't think we see a season like that we saw last year. I don't think we have something like that again this year. I'm going to knock on the table while I'm saying that, because anything can happen at the end of the day. But I also think even if this group was to go through maybe the injuries or something not as traumatic as Damar Hamlin, but I feel like the group has been through a lot together in that they could go through something else, something not as tough, but knowing what they went through, knowing how they dealt with it, knowing how they moved on and got better and grew from a scenario situation like that, that if they were to face something similar, that they would have the tools to be able to face it, deal with it, learn from it, grow from it. But hopefully they're not in a situation where they're doing any of that this upcoming season.
As any NFL season will show you, and last season's probably the best proof of this, there are no guarantees. The Bills had an unusually long list of injuries last year, an untold number of adverse circumstances thrown at them, from weather to, you know, the passing of Dawson Knox's brother, you know, to the Damar Hamlin situation, to Kim Pegula's situation. So all of that completely unexpected. What's the likelihood of that happening again this year? I would say 1 in 10 million. But every NFL season for every NFL team has some kind of adversity rolled into it. It just, the season's too long. The sport itself is too physical to not have things crop up over the course of the year. And it's more about how good is your team at withstanding those adverse circumstances and powering through them, either because they have great team depth, great team resolve, or both. So the Bills had an unbelievable season despite all of that. So, you know, if they even get just a little bit less adversity, you would hope it would mean better things, especially come the postseason. We have to take a break here, but an open line for you at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. What position, if you had to pick one, do you still think needs just a little bit of tweaking before we get to training camp? We'll take your phone calls. Mike in Rochester going to lead us off when we return here on One Bills Live. All right, back here on One Bills Live, Chris Brown, Matty Glab with you. We mentioned DeAndre Hopkins, and poof, there's stuff from DeAndre Hopkins.
Right out of thin air.
Yeah, he was asked on the I Am Athlete podcast which quarterbacks he'd love to have him have throwing him the football, and his first answer was Josh Allen. I don't think he's the only receiver in the league that would answer that way, but the fact that he is...
Are you fanning the flames, Brownie?
I'm not. He
I'm
said it,
kidding.
Not me.
I'm just kidding.
No, I know you are. But there he is. I mean, answering the question. He didn't mention Kyler Murray in his top five. He now claims, in hindsight, it's because he's injured right now, and that's why he didn't mention Kyler. You know, he's got the injury that's going to keep him out at the beginning of the year. Here's the thing. If he so badly wants somebody else throwing him the football, he's going to have to make some major concessions in terms of his salary, because none of these other clubs have enough money to fit him under their cap, unless they get insanely creative with the money he's still owed over his last 2 years. So if he so badly wants one of those guys throwing to him, he's going to have to make some major financial concessions for another team to be able to make it work right now. That's just the way I see it. But stranger things have happened in this league for sure. Let's get back to the phones at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550, number to call, to let us know what position on the roster would you like to see just get a little more tweaking before we get to training camp and the regular season. As promised, we lead off with Mike in Rochester. What do you got for us, Mike? You're on One Bills Live.
Well, hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
First of all, I want to congratulate Maddie, because week before the draft, Maddie did say that we were going to, her hot take was that we were going to take a tight end. And I got on her side, and I was trying to convince my friends that we were going to be taking a tight end. And they all thought I was crazy, Maddie.
Yeah.
But ended up, you were being right. Though I thought it was going to be Mike Myers. I'm glad we got Kincaid. But that's where we are.
Yeah, that take your bows. Said,
hey, that being said, I think that we got the pieces in place at the tight end position, but now we need to tweak how they're going to be used. So that's my take on it. You know, pieces are there. How are we going to use it? Thanks for taking my call. Appreciate it, guys.
Yeah, no problem. I mean, I don't – Manny and I were discussing this last week. Steve and I talked about it on our latest podcast, Bills by the Numbers. I think that the Bills' usage of 12 personnel is going to go up from where it was last year. The Bills were dead last in the league in the usage of 12 personnel. I think it will go up, but I don't think it's going to be out of this world dramatic, because I think what the Bills do best is the three receiver sets, the 11 personnel. That's their trademark of their offense, and I don't think they move away from that to suddenly make 12 personnel their bread and butter. Where I think 12 personnel is going to show up more for the Bills is in the red zone, because the ability to get two targets like Kincaid and Knox on the field down there, I think, could really do some damage and increase a red zone offense that was ninth in the league last year into a potential top five unit as far as sticking the ball in the end zone goes.
Yeah, appreciate you getting on board with my hot take of drafting a tight end in the first round. Hey, I thought it could happen, and it was really cool to watch the board fall how it did, and the fact that the Bills had to move up to go get Dalton meant that they really liked him and thought that he could do something to this offense and for this offense. It will be interesting to see his usage as a rookie in his first season in the NFL. I'm really interested to see, is he going to be rolled out in game one? How much? How frequently? Is this going to be something where he is going to be a rookie? And I'm thinking about how rookies are used on this team and how they've been used in the past. Is he somebody that's going to be used from the get-go? Is he going to earn his spot there? Is he going to be folded in within the first few weeks? And what will that look like? I agree with you, Brownie, in that, you know, your three wide receiver sets that you've ran in the past that this offense has done a really good job with, I don't think those are going to go away at all. 12 personnel in the red zone, heck yeah, sign me up for that, because of the fact that these two in Dawson Knox and Dalton Kincaid are complete mismatches once you get inside the red zone. The windows get tighter. These guys are bigger. They have, and Dalton Kincaid has elite ball skills when you turn on the tape and when you watch him as a receiver. That's a reason why Brandon Bean and this coaching staff really liked him as a tight end, is because what he could offer as a type of wide receiver in addition to being a tight end. They kind of look at him when Brandon Bean would explain it as, you know, it's kind of like 11 and a half personnel because of what he offers the game. I think another thing with that is, and I'm catching myself probably needing to do this as well, as tempering the expectations for a rookie, right?
Well, right.
The D-hop conversation, the conversation of, hey, let's get another wide receiver in here to be able to help out Josh Allen and Stephon Diggs and Gabe Davis. Well, Dalton Kincaid is maybe not that receiver, but he's going to be somebody who can help out Stephon and Josh. But how much? And how much should we expect from him in his first season? I believe this is somebody who can grow into being a really important part of this offense, but maybe not in year one. Maybe year one is starting to roll out that red carpet and getting him comfortable within the offense.
Right, and as you mentioned, the history of this coaching staff is they don't throw rookies on the field. They make them earn it. So how quickly can he earn playing time? Or does this coaching staff come to the realization that we need guys that are this talented on the field as quickly as possible? As long as they're doing all the right things and making progress, let's get them out there sooner rather than later. I know there were a lot of people amongst the fan base last year that wanted to see Khalil Shakir on the field sooner and more often, and wanted James Cook on the field sooner and more often. That didn't happen until the latter stages of the season. And I know some fans that I've spoken to wonder if that cost them come the playoffs. Shakir really showed up in the playoffs, if you think about it. He was making plays, critical plays, third down plays to keep drives alive. And Cook flashed in the last quarter of the season. Does that convince the coaching staff, hey, you know what? We're picking the right people for a reason. We invest all this time to make sure we're picking guys that have the Bills' DNA. So if that's the case, and they can help us sooner rather than later, let's get them on the field sooner rather than later. Be interesting to see if what Shakir and Cook did down the stretch and in the playoffs could convince the coaching staff, hey, you know what, let's get Kincaid in, you know, incorporated into the offense maybe a little bit sooner than we did with those two guys last season. Got to take a break here. More of your phone calls, though, in hour number two. We are wide open, 803-0550, the number to get on board, 1-888-550-2550, the toll-free number. Got open lines for you. When we start hour number two, it begins with Mark in Jersey City, so hang tight. We'll get to your phone calls when we return here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio.
This is One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health.
All right, here we are, hour number two on a Monday. Chris Brown, Maddie Glab with you, discussing the Bills roster and maybe a position or two that you might still like to see a tweak at between now and training camp, or at least now in the regular season. We did tell you that the spring league meetings are taking place up in Minnesota. We talked about the potential for a vote to be made on making fair catches on kickoffs spotted at the 25-yard line. That is going to be pushed back until Tuesday. According to NFL Network's Tom Pelissero, special teams coordinators are totally against it because of what we were mentioning earlier. Yeah. It kind of takes out the ability to pop a kick up short to force the return man to field it because you have confidence in your coverage unit to tackle him before the 25-yard line. Well, if you pop it up short and now they can just fair catch it, it goes to the 25 anyway and takes out that element of the game. So special teams coordinators are totally against it. The competition committee, however, is in favor because it takes one more collision out of the game and arguably makes it safer. So we'll see what comes of that tomorrow. Meanwhile, NFL owners did approve the proposal allowing teams to dress a third quarterback on game day without using an active roster spot. This is like the old days when they had the emergency third quarterback available on game day. So if, God forbid, something happens to your first two, you can put that guy into the game. San Francisco certainly could have used that in the NFC title game last year. Because by the end, they had Christian McCaffrey playing quarterback for him. It was a disaster. So that's kind of what prompted that kind of coming back in. And that was approved. So that is good to go. But we're going to get back to the phone lines here as we want to know from you, what position, if you had to pick one, would you like to see a little tweaking to before the Bills go to training camp? Back to the phones we go, where we have an open line for you at 803-0550 and to Mark in Jersey City. What do you got first, Mark?
Good afternoon, guys. I think it's defensive line. It's always the one position Bean never seems content at. He always seems to be shaking the trees, trying to see what falls out there, whether it's end, whether it's defensive tackle, from the time they got there. And given the situation contract-wise, lack of production from some of the younger defensive ends even, and once Vaughn went out, and I believe Rousseau was out some games, the pass rush really, really took a hit. And they started to get more exposed down the field. You know, and they were injury riddled back there too. So I think there, and then tight end. I'll do you one better, Chris. I think we'll see 23 personnel once they get inside the 10 because they love Quentin Morris. They liked him. He split out, caught the one touchdown against Miami, and he played a lot more than I thought. I think he played a lot more than anybody thought he would play last year. And anytime he got an opportunity, he was good at it. So I think there'll be some games depending on the weather, because we know those games will happen, that we'll see that. We'll see him up instead of an extra wide receiver.
Yeah, I mean, I could see some jumbo for sure, 23 personnel. I think 12 might be what they – I mean, again, after 11 personnel, which I think we all expect to still be their bread and butter this year offensively, I think 12 is going to be right behind that in the red zone. And then, you know what I would sign up for? I'd sign up for some 22 – get Damian Harris or Latavius Murray in there and put Reggie Gilliam in front of him and let's go. I would sign up for that. I think we're going to see more power running between the tackles, not just in short yardage, but late in games when the Bills have the lead, maybe more than we've seen ever in the McDermott era. So things to contemplate and to think about. But there's another vote for the defensive line, Maddie.
Yeah, you can never have too many defensive linemen. I know you could say that for the offensive line as well. I think they do have a good amount of guys right now on the roster, at least, and bodies who can compete for stops, for starting spots, and bodies who can compete also for depth pieces, because they're going to need that along the offensive line this year. But defensive end is an interesting position as well, beyond Von Miller and Greg Rousseau. Who fits into the fold there? Yes, those are going to be your primary guys on the end, but there are going to be downs. There are going to be times where there's going to be different bodies aside from Rousseau and Von Miller playing in those games. We don't know if Von Miller is going to be good to go week one. We're not sure about that. I mean, hopefully that is the case. We've heard that he's on the right timeline. We haven't heard a date. We'll probably get some updates throughout OTAs and mandatory minicamp from where Von is, what he's doing on the field, even if he's even out there, if he's rehabbing, what that looks like. But if it's not going to be Von in the beginning of the season, there's going to be somebody else who has to fill that hole, which also means there's going to have to be somebody behind that person who is filling in for Von Miller. And I would love to see A.J. Epenesa and Boogie Basham and Shaq Lawson continue to take those steps forward. But I think we've all been wanting to see more out of those guys when it's their turn to be on the field. And they've had times and they've had consistent games, but I think it's putting it together, and that's the case for somebody like Ed Oliver as well. Is yes, you've had stints, you've had series, you've had bursts, where whatever you want to call it, where it's been good and you've been a productive player and you've made a difference, but can you put that together game after game?
I think just to illustrate our last caller Mark's point even more, how, you know, Brandon Bean's always trying to tweak and tinker with the defensive line rotation. There are 18 defensive linemen on the roster right now. There are 10.
I didn't know there were 18.
There are 10 defensive tackles and 8 defensive ends. I mean, they go 5 deep at defensive tackle right now. Now, obviously, we know not all of those guys are going to make the active roster, but I wonder how many they carry at the end. They carried nine defensive linemen when they made the initial 53-man roster. I'm sure it vacillated between 9 and 10 through the course of the year based on player availability, injuries at other positions, et cetera. I'm wondering if they carry 10 on the 53 this year, because I think if you plan to play – if Sean McDermott still plans to play nickel as much as they have the past couple of years – do you really need more than 5 linebackers on your roster? I mean, you need them for special teams. I get that. But there's really only 2 on the field most of the time on defense. And you have the added talent of a guy by the name of Taylor Rapp, who could factor into some 3 safety looks and take snaps there. So you roll all that together, and I wonder if they keep, instead of 5 defensive ends and just 4 defensive tackles, as was the case last year, do they go 5 and 5 and take a 5th defensive tackle for the active 53? Because you got to remember, again, Maddie, we're talking about all these expiring contracts, but they're all veteran players.
Yes.
You're talking Daquan Jones, Ed Oliver, Tim Settle, Puna Ford, Jordan Phillips. Those are arguably your top 5, with a bunch of other guys that have been on the practice squad, and DJ Dale, the undrafted rookie. So I'm not saying you can't put a veteran on the practice squad. You can. I mean, there are those exceptions on the expanded practice squad rules that have come into vogue the last couple of years since COVID. But I wonder if they keep 10 on there outright.
They, not last year, the year before. Was it 10 or 11? Because I remember when we were doing,
I think it was 10 offensive linemen.
Okay.
I know that.
I know we
I'm
had
trying
a
to
big
remember.
I know we had a big number at defensive line.
Okay.
Eric Washington's first season, because the big storyline was we want to rotate these guys.
Yep.
And we're going to have more on our active roster. And then they usually had one more up for the game day roster. to rotate, I believe.
Oh, like, and you mean like an elevation?
Yes. Yeah. I think they would usually elevate one more defensive lineman.
Yeah, I mean, that's your way around it nowadays, although you're limited to how many free elevations you can have. It's up to three now without having to subject that player to waivers and get claimed by somebody else. You can just option them back to the practice squad, but you can only do that three times max in a season. So if you had a guy that said, oh, let's just call this guy up every week, well, after three times, he gets exposed to waivers and somebody else can claim him. And if he's good enough to play for you 3 weeks in a row, chances are somebody that might be short at that position is going to scoop him up. So you have to be strategic mm-hmm. with that stuff, which makes me think they probably do keep 5 and 5, especially if they're going to rotate.
Did they have 6 linebackers on the roster last year? 5. It was
Bernard, Matakevich. Klein came later. So Dodson, those three. And then you had Milano and Edmonds. That's 5. I'm trying to remember if there was a 6th. Oh, Baylen Spector.
Spector as well.
So they had 6.
Yeah.
I don't know if they, if you're carrying, you got to rob from Peter to pay Paul mm-hmm. if you're going to carry more one position than another. And they obviously felt special teams was more important last year, and they carried 6 linebackers. I'm wondering what they do this time around. Or do they carry it light somewhere else? Maybe they even rob from the offensive side of the ball,
mm-hmm.
Where there's going to be another decision to make. You know, with the tight end position,
and the
are you carrying 3? Reggie Gilliam, where are you going to factor his role in? Does he factor into the tight end group? Or are you going to slide him over to the running back group? You got some veteran players in that running back room now, like Latavius Murray and Damian Harris. Do they both make the roster?
I look at the running back group thinking we might carry another an extra running back this year. And I know in the past there's been running backs on a roster that have played more special teams role, but
yeah, you're going to carry 5 there?
Yeah, you have...
Counting Gilliam? I'm counting Gilliam.
Counting Gilliam as a running back. You have older players like Latavius Murray and somebody who's played in the league several years like Nyheim Hines and Damian Harris. And I start to see roles for each one of these guys on the offense,
right,
depending on what situation, the down and distance that you're in. If it's a short yardage situation, Latavius Murray is a very different makeup of a running back compared to what else we have on the roster. Nyheim Hines is different than James Cook, and James Cook is different than Damian Harris. I see all of these 4 running backs fitting in different spots and different needs within the game.
Right. I think Latavius Murray, who I think is certainly good enough to still be a regular rostered NFL running back in this league, even at age 33. I mean, we had him here in studio. The guy's fit as a fiddle. But I wonder if he takes on the role that we saw. What's the guy's name? Duke Johnson mm-hmm. last year, who kind of was optioned to the practice squad and stayed there until he was needed. Or maybe you have a given opponent where you just want to power run the hell out of them. All right, let's elevate Latavius
for
this
game
week.
Days, yep.
And then option him back down. And then he's one of our 4 protected players on the mm-hmm. practice squad that we don't let anybody touch. And we have him as a luxury there to use at our discretion. And if we have an injury, bang, he's on the active roster. I wonder if they do that similar to the way they did last year with Duke Johnson.
And you don't have a Tywan Jones anymore on the roster, at least at that running back
right,
spot.
Right, gobbling up another spot.
Yeah, he took up a spot, but he was a special teams player, so you wonder if that special teams player fits in a different position other than running back. Maybe it's linebacker like you talked about and like players have been a part of last year. Tyler Matakevich, Terrell Bernard, Baylen Spector, guys who are Tyrell Dodson, who are also used on special teams.
Right. And then, you know, you've got added depth at safety now because you have Taylor Rapp here. DeMar Hamlin's been cleared. You hope he makes the full recovery, mm-hmm. and he's part of the roster conversation as well. And then the first guy they signed in free agency this year was Zane Anderson, who's a special teams guy. So maybe instead of Tywan Jones at the running back position, is your extra special teams player a safety? And Zane Anderson. We'll have to wait and see. These are the kinds of tricky decisions
yep.
that have to be made when you're trying to figure out your 53. What position do you think still needs tweaking? We're going to go back to the phones. Open line for you there at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550, the number to get on board. But we go to Rich in Tonawanda next. What do you got for us, Rich? You're on One Bills Live.
Hey, Chris and Maddie. Nice to talk to you. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Hey, the one thing you really haven't stressed on is the offensive line.
Okay.
Now, Allen ran for his life last year. And I think especially center can be upgraded. And the reason why I say that is because, in my opinion, I don't think Mitch Morse did a – I mean, he's good, but I don't think he's big enough. I don't think he's strong enough. And I'd like to see the offensive line have better run blockers and maybe even replace the center. What are your thoughts?
Okay, thanks for the call, Rich. We can address that. I'll say this. I thought Mitch Morse had his best year in a Bills uniform last season. I thought it was his most consistent season since he's been here. That's number one. Number two, he has an extraordinary relationship with Josh Allen in terms of getting the protection set and the pre, you know, and the line calls and stuff like that. That works very seamlessly between those two. That should not be dismissed. He's a mobile center. He's not a push-the-pile center. So as long as you know what you're getting there, I think you have to be happy with what he's given you, especially last season. But I think part of the reason why we saw the turnover at the guard position this offseason was for the reason you're discussing, Rich, to be better between the tackles in the run game. And I think the Bills, as a coaching staff and a personnel department, put that on the guard position because they think so much of Mitch as a center. I think they're looking to help him on the interior, and that's why you see a 330-pound guard drafted in Osiris Torrance. That's why the biggest free agent contract that was handed out this offseason went to Connor McGovern, who they got from Dallas. Those are two guys that are going to – one is probably going to be the starter at left guard. The other is going to be in the mix to start at right guard. And I think if you have two girthy size guys at the guard positions, I think that makes you a better in-between-the-tackles running football team, which I think – is a fair criticism, Rich, that it hasn't been as good. But I don't think it comes at the expense of Mitch Morse's spot. I think it's you could see two changes at the guard positions from last season to this season.
Yeah, I thought Mitch Morse had an incredible season last year because of the fact that the people around him were switching and were in and out of the lineup so much.
Injuries and such.
And this is a center who, since he came to the Bills in 2019, sure, you've had a solidified five at times, but it's been a position group that's experienced a lot of injury and has had to shift a lot, even throughout games. I remember times where it was Mitch coming off of the field and other people rolling into that center position. Not saying that he's injured a lot, but it's just an offensive line that's been through quite a bit in terms of shifting and having to get comfortable with somebody who's just coming into a game, maybe in the second or third quarter, and you as a center have to create and know that chemistry right away. So at the flip of a switch, when a new guy is standing next to you, you have to be ready for that. And I think he's done a really good job of doing that through practices, training camp, and relationship building with his players, as well as a quarterback like Josh Allen. Mitch Morse is going into his ninth NFL season. I still think he has years left in the tank. Sure, down the road, this is going to be a position that the Bills will need to address, whether that's in the draft or via free agency. But I also think with the additions that they've made to the roster with the offensive line position, Brandon Bean does not think that that center position needs to be looked at, doesn't need a next person in waiting yet because of the fact that they added so many guards to the roster this season. I think that's a telling thing for this team, is that, hey, Mitch is still doing his job. He's still a great center, a great offensive lineman. He was a Pro Bowler this year as well. He made it to the Pro Bowl. So I think they've got a solid choice in Mitch Morse. I think what you said, Brownie, they're addressing the offensive line through guard positions this year. They've had guys at the guard spots in the last few years that have been on short contracts. Roger Saffold was on a one-year deal, but we saw guys be brought in to this building this year that have signed more than one-year deals. So maybe you're going to start to see more solid play at that position with guys who are signing three-year deals,
right.
two-year
and,
deals.
And a different, you know, body composition as well. Bigger, girthier guards who can push the pile. I mean, McGovern is a good pass protector, but, you know, he can move people in the run game as well. And then we all know what Osiris Torrance's calling card has been all through college. He is a people mover as well. So I think he's going to be very stiff competition for a guy like Ryan Bates, who uses athleticism more than anything else to be an effective offensive lineman. Now, as far as Morse and, you know, who would back him up, you're looking at Ryan Bates. You're looking at Ike Butker. You're looking at Greg Manns, who is back with the team as well after being on the practice squad for most of last season. So that's kind of how you chop that position up behind Mitch Morse, but I don't anticipate a change there anytime soon. 803-0550, the number to get on board, 1-888-550-2550, the toll-free number. As we are still taking your phone calls, we're wide open throughout today as we're asking for that one roster position that you think could still use a little tweaking between now and the time we get to training camp. It was a real hard choice for me, Maddie. I mean, you're kind of splitting hairs here. I know you picked defensive line, and that's a good one to pick. Not only because, you know, you can always stand to – I mean, it's like Brandon Bean says all the time, you never have enough pass rushers. So I get that. I guess there's a small part of me that wishes there was a little more experience – at the linebacker position. I thought that it was a foregone conclusion that Tremaine Edmonds was going to be gone because he was just going to get priced out of Buffalo's range of what they could afford to pay him, and that proved to be the case. I just thought they might choose to go with a proven veteran starter, you know, as a stopgap measure or insurance. But I think that's what A.J. Klein is. He's veteran insurance in case a young up-and-comer like Terrell Bernard – or Tyrell Dodson or Baylen Specter can't assume the role of the starting position. So we'll see. And again, I'm splitting hairs on that, but that's just kind of something that I thought might happen that didn't. But I'm not like, oh my gosh, they're screwed because they didn't do that. So I guess I kind of see it as splitting hairs. But let's go back to the phones and to Paul in Arizona next. What do you got for us, Paul?
Hey, how you doing, guys? Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to throw in there, too, that Jim Brown also played basketball
yes.
at Syracuse. My dad played at Pitt, and he played a couple of years, and he actually averaged in double figures in 55, I think, in 56.
Yeah, three-sport guy for sure.
Yeah. So that was it. I just go Bills, and we're going to the Chargers game 23rd of December.
Oh, the night game, yeah.
So... anyways, love your commentator, yeah, blah, blah, blah. Love your comments, and have a good one.
All right. Thanks, Paul. Appreciate you chiming in on that. Yeah, Jim Brown was a three-sport guy for sure, even at the major college level, which is pretty crazy. I don't think he played those for all 4 years. I think Paul just said basketball for only two. I don't know if he played lacrosse more than 1 or 2 years, but all those coaches were beating down his door. Hey, why don't you come out and play this? Because you're great at it. But yeah, getting back to the roster, I think the roster looks pretty good, but you just don't know what's going to come down the pike. You know, DeAndre Hopkins is still fanning the flames with all the interviews he does these days, basically asked, as we mentioned earlier on the show on the I Am Athlete pod, what quarterback would you want throwing to you if you had your choice? And he said Josh Allen first. And then he mentioned some others like Lamar and a few other guys, but he's got to change his tune on what he's going to get paid the next 2 years if he wants something like that to happen, because he just costs too much money, which is why no team has even really made a formal offer that we have heard of to try to acquire him. And so where it goes from here is anybody's guess.
I think another thing with the depth on this roster surrounding the question that we're asking today, what position do you think still needs tweaking? The Bills, in a sense, last year, because of the injuries that this team faced, they got to look at what their depth was like. A lot of teams have depth, but if they have a healthy season, they don't get to see how that depth looks like on this on the field, how it works together. If they believe they have good depth, or if they need to get more depth in the offseason because your second and third string guys didn't perform how you wanted them to perform. So I think one thing that the Bills have on their side, and again, not a great thing that they had to go through so many injuries last year, but Brandon Bean and the scouting department and the coaching staff got a really good look at some of their second and third string guys on this roster, from the offense to the defense. And in some ways, you can see how the roster has changed with that depth, with maybe guys who you think would be second and third string guys this year. There's a lot of the same and familiar faces who have been depth on this team and who've been second team and third team guys who have been able to ride the wave with this group for 3 or 4 years. And that's because when they've been called upon, they've answered and they've done a good job. But then there's some positions that we're seeing some new depth come onto this roster. And like you spoke about, that guard spot is a place where we've seen a lot of new faces on this roster. One other position I always think about that we have seen third string players and second team guys get a lot of reps at is in the secondary through the cornerback and the safety injuries. We've seen guys go through it, and we've seen guys stay on the roster because of that. A player like DeMar Hamlin, when he was called upon, when he had to play, I know last year he went what he went through, and we hope that he'll be a part of the roster this year and healthy enough to play. But that's a position group that's gotten tested in a lot of ways, the corners and the safeties, and Dane Jackson has earned a spot on this roster year after year. When you can even go back to him competing with Levi Wallace for a position, and being there when Trey White wasn't a part of the lineup. But I am so looking forward to seeing what Trey White looks like this year. Yeah. Now that he has a year under his belt where he's been able to get back to the game, where he's been able to put that ACL injury aside and truly compete opposite of Kyir Elam. And I also wonder what's going to be the case at that corner spot. Is it going to be a battle for that spot opposite of Trey White? Are Kyir and Dane going to battle it out this season? What's that going to look like? Is Christian Benford part of the mix? As we've heard Brandon Bean say, you know, safety might be a spot for him. Yeah. or corner. We're not sure what that's going to look like this year, depending on what the depth looks like at each position.
And when you were talking about all that, the first name that popped into my head was Jamarcus Ingram. Here's a guy that you probably don't have any knowledge of how he would play if he gets dropped into the fire in a real game. They had to do that last year in week 3 when they were dropping like flies down in Miami. Jamarcus Ingram played a half of football at outside corner against Tyreek Hill, Jalen Waddle, and Trent Sherfield.
I forgot about that, but you're so right.
But that is valuable tape on a young player in your pipeline that you probably know a whole lot more about that player now than if he had never played in a regular season game. There'd be a lot less to go on. So, yeah, the point is well taken. We got to take a break here, though, because we are up against it. But we'll be back with more of your phone calls here for the final half hour of the show on One Bills Live. Stay tuned. All right, welcome back to One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Maddie Glab with you, talking about a roster position that might need a little tweaking in your estimation before we get to training camp. Open line for you at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550, the number to get on board. We go back to the phones and to Mark in West Seneca. What do you got for us, Mark?
Hi, guys. Hey, you guys started talking about it just a little bit. I'm really interested to see what they do at corner. First question about corner, is Tre'Davious, is he in the facility? Is he working out here locally, or is he at home working out? How does he look, if you guys have seen him? Because we really need him to be back to the old Tre'Davious White if we're going to be moving forward back there. I think we have a lot of youth back there. I'd be really interested to see if Brandon adds a veteran guy to at least compete with all these young kids at corner. And the other part of that is I'd be really interested to see who he'd bring in, because they've always been very, very clear that they only bring in guys that fit their scheme. And if whoever they would bring in, I think would be an indication, maybe a little bit of an indication, of something, some kind of players and scheme that McDermott might be thinking about running with, you know, with new corners back there or whatever. And then I just wanted to, we haven't talked about it a lot. I want to give Murph well wishes and prayers. I know he's still recovering at home, and we miss him. I hope he's ready for the regular season. But if he's not, Brownie, are you still in line to do the games? Because you did a great job, and it was fun to listen to you. So,
okay, yeah, so. Thanks for
you
the
guys
call,
have
Mark.
A great afternoon.
Yeah, appreciate it. I think we're all hopeful that Murph is back and ready to roll. And, you know, he's working hard to make the progress he needs to make, and I think they're going to get him all the time that he needs. And I think that's kind of where it sits right now. As for corner, have you seen Trey in the building? I haven't seen him.
So this past week we had, or weekend-ish, we had rookie minicamp recently.
Right.
So we were able to be out on the field for rookie minicamp. Tasker and I were out on the field for maybe the first 10 minutes. Trey obviously wasn't there for rookie minicamp. But aside from that, when they were just doing workouts the weeks before rookie minicamp, I did see Trey a couple times. So he's been around. I have not seen him today, but we didn't have open availability at all today. They did practice, but we'll know tomorrow because we have availability tomorrow, which means we'll hear from Sean. We're also going to hear from Josh Allen, and we're going to hear from John Butler, one of the coaches in the secondary, who will probably talk about Trey White, and we'll get asked some questions about Trey White. So, yeah, we'll get to check it out tomorrow, see if Trey White, see if all the other guys are out there. But I have seen him around the building here in the off season.
And as far as adding a veteran corner, Mark, I kind of had that similar thought. And if it hasn't happened yet, there's a part of me that wonders, does that mean a decision has been made on where Christian Benford's going to line up? Because I think if he's going to line up at corner, maybe they don't add a veteran free agent. Do you know what I mean? But
yeah,
if
that makes sense.
If all of a sudden we go out to OTAs tomorrow and there's Benford, you know,
safety,
lining up at safety, well, then maybe the door is still open for something like that to happen. And there are some good veteran corners out there. I mean, Marcus Peters is out there. William Jackson is out there. Bradley Roby, Casey Hayward. I mean, there's some quality veteran corners that I think at this stage in their career might be willing, you know, to take a reserve position or maybe say, hey, you can come in and compete for a starting job, but we can't guarantee you a starting job. I think some of those guys would sign up for that. Troy Hill, you know, is another guy, played for the Rams for a while. There's a lot of name corners that if you go down the list, you're like, oh, I know that guy. Oh, I've seen that guy play. Like, there's more than usual out there. So, and I think it's due in part to the fact that it was a strong corner draft.
It was.
So it's a chance to get cheap labor at a position that costs a premium. So how much does the cost come down to maybe get a proven veteran corner on a budget? You might be able to do that. And so I'm not saying it's predicated on where Benford ends up, but I wonder if that's part of the equation here. And if he ends up at corner, maybe the Bills say, you know what, we're good there. We're good. We got the depth we need. But if maybe they slide him over to safety, does that change things? We'll have to wait and see what tomorrow shows us.
Yeah, that'll be interesting. And it'll have to fit the bill of what Brandon Bean wants to spend on that position if he were to add another player to that position group, to the cornerbacks position group. Again, we know the Bills aren't working with a lot of money that's left over. And Brandon Bean was saying this before they had signed the rookie class. Now all the rookies are signed, so they're working with even less money now. And where do you allocate the money that's left? Is corner a position that Brandon Bean thinks it has a need, or maybe another spot available to be able to bring somebody on? Or is that at another position group? Is that on offense? Is that on defense? You know, our question today, what position do you think still needs tweaking? We opened the show and you said, I think we all know Brandon Bean well enough by now to know that he's really never done tweaking. There's always tweaking that's happening. And if there's somebody that's out there that he thinks could be able to add to this group or add to the competition that's going to happen here throughout OTAs and training camp, Heck yeah, he's going to do it because it's going to make the players better who are part of that competition. Where is it going to be? Because this roster is at a point where you're paying your top-tier guys and you can't afford everybody anymore.
Let's go to the tweet sheet on what position you think still needs tweaking, brought to you by Corrigan Moving Systems, the official equipment moving company of the Buffalo Bills, where Jack says, would still love to add a big fish at wide receiver, but that ship has probably sailed. I wouldn't mind adding another defensive end. I like the idea of Frank Clark for depth and competition, especially if Vaughn needs time to get back, and he knows the Chiefs, so that's a bonus. Yeah, I mean, it's like we said earlier, Brandon has said it himself, you can never have enough defensive ends, or never enough pass rushers, I believe is the direct quote. Frank Clark, I wonder what his injury situation is, because they've cropped up the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. I know he just was a cap casualty of the Chiefs. That's why he's not there anymore. What's his price, I think, is the bigger question. And I don't know that it's come down enough for the Bills to be able to handle it. I think that's the biggest question mark there. From Hot in Arizona, I still don't believe they have solved for Edmonds leaving. I don't see anyone that is currently on the team able to fill those shoes. That is one of the bigger questions going into the 2023 season. Do they have a viable full-time replacement for Tremaine Edmonds on this roster? The competition will reveal who is chosen to fill the role. Then the next question is, can they fill it as well as Edmonds did?
Yeah, and I think when you look at that linebacker spot, I think one thing that I thought of even before Tremaine Edmonds is leaving is you hope that they can keep a guy like him. They couldn't because of the price tag that he got paid because of what he was worth, which that's amazing for Tremaine Edmonds. I hope he has a great career, however long he's with the Chicago Bears. But then you think about, okay, then what is the value of that middle linebacker position according to how the coaching staff thinks of it within the defense that they play? What's the most valuable? Where are they putting their money in to position groups across different defensive positions? And I start to look at, not that the middle linebacker spot is not valuable, it is very valuable in this defense because they're the captain of the defense. And if you're having two guys, you know, you're playing in a 4-2-5 a lot of the time, the two guys on the field need to be really good at what they're doing. But the fact that they didn't add a veteran or they didn't draft somebody, a linebacker at the top of the draft, whether that was first, second, or third round, then you wonder, okay, is this position group, is this defense going to look any different this year because they didn't add a veteran, because they didn't spend big draft money on a middle linebacker position group or position player?
Yeah, and you also wonder, is there a possibility that they use more than one player to fill that spot? Like, does A.J. Klein play on quote-unquote rundowns? And does Terrell Bernard or Baylen Specter play on passing downs? Like, there's a whole number of possibilities that could come out of the competition. We're all just going to have to wait and to see how it all shakes out under this coaching staff. Break time here. Maddie and I wrap it up with some final thoughts on the tweet sheet next here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. Left with some more tweet sheet. Vanilla says, our edges on offense and defense need elite talent. We need way better pass pro out of both offensive tackles. On defense, we need to get home with four, and without Miller, we have just a bunch of guys, no stud. I will disagree with you there. I think Greg Rousseau has the potential to be a stud.
Yeah.
I think people forget this guy had four sacks in his first four games, then got the high ankle sprain, and he really wasn't right the rest of the year. If that guy can stay healthy, I expect a year three jump from him. And I'll say this too. I think Spencer Brown year three, I think you can expect a year three jump from him. We've seen so many players under this regime take off in year three. Dawson Knox, Taron Johnson, even Tremaine Edmonds to a certain extent, Josh Allen year three. I mean, you know what I mean? There's so many year three examples. I really hope if Spencer Brown and, Rousseau can put it together, that'd be great.
Yeah, I expect steps up from them and big years from them. I'm excited to see both those younger players and what they can do.
Maddie, thanks for your help the last couple of days. We'll all be out on the field for OTAs for full coverage on BuffaloBills.com and here on One Bills Live. We'll see you tomorrow at 1. Steve's back.